Hi, and welcome to Northwest Book Talk. I'm Patty Grusher, and today I'm interviewing Corbin Mook. He is the Pacific Northwest fiction writer, author of High Water Heavy. It's a hard-boiled mystery set in 1948, Portland, Oregon. Corbin's own story is almost as colorful as his fiction. Over the years, he has scrubbed teppanyaki grills, felled timber in the Chuckanuts, run zip lines in Northern Ireland, lived on an AmeriCorps stipend, and kept writing through all of it. So High Water Heavy follows two very different private investigators who get pulled into what first looks like a routine death on Portland Skid Row, only to discover something much bigger. Corbin, welcome to Northwest Book Talk.
Hi, Patty. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
So you've been making up stories since you were very young. So do you remember when writing first went from something you enjoyed to something you thought you might seriously pursue?
Yeah. As you say, I've been writing for a very long time, writing a lot of different stories in little journals and things that I kept as a kid. And I think that when I first thought it might turn into something more was kind of around in college, where I started playing around with more short stories and then really getting, funnily enough, very invested in my sort of senior thesis and really enjoyed the process of being in the bowels of Western Washington University's library at 1 a.m, just kind of like really crafting a lot of prose in the paragraphs and finding myself not getting too concerned with the citations and endnotes and things, and much towards like the meat and bones of the writing. And so from that, worked on a lot of different projects over the years. And I think it's in the last 6 or 7, I've really tried to invest very heavily in working on longer projects and, you know, just kind of trying to finish things and get things out there. So, you know, it's been kind of a slow process, but one that's, I feel like, reaching a bit of its zenith.
Great. And your background is varied. I mean, it's all over the place. You've worked around restaurants, timber, zip lines, mm-hmm. AmeriCorps. And so how much of that life experience eventually finds its way into your fiction?
Yeah, well, I think a good deal. I mean, a lot of the characters in the book have different aspects from different roles that of people I've encountered, and in some ways, like in tangentially work that I've done as well. But I think even more sort of deeply, having that varied level of lots and lots of different professional experiences, jobs, has, I feel like, given me a lot of different avenues into ways that people talk to one another and ways that people interact with one another. So I feel like it gives me a sort of broad canvas to paint upon of, you know, brusqueness and hostility and like people getting along and people navigating the different relationships in different ways and having so many different varied jobs where people have interacted in from different angles has, like, I think really enriched that.
Yeah, I can see how, you know, sometimes you can write and every character sounds almost like every other character, but you really pulled it off that we have individual characterization, which I think is an important for a good story.
So, I'm super glad to hear that.
Oh, good. So let's say your story was set in Portland in 1948. So what drew you to that time in history of Portland?
Well, I think that time in the history of Portland is really interesting because it's, you know, it's close to our modern era, and there's definitely still people around today who were alive in that period of history, but it also feels pretty far. And I think it feels particularly far because the city of Portland then had such a bad reputation nationally and such a reputation of corruption, and as kind of like the basically like raw edge of a lot of the basic like closing of the frontier, as it were, in the first half of the 20th century. So I've always really drawn to that period because it's sort of like a generation or two after the closing of the frontier. And it's this time when a lot of things in the city as we know it are coming together. And particularly in the book, I won't give too much away, but it's that year, 1948 in particular, is a very pivotal year for the city of Portland, and one that very dramatically reshaped how the city was at the time and would be up until our modern day. So I feel like it's this fulcrum point where history sort of turns. And in sort of the broader story, America coming out of the Second World War, entering into this sort of 1950s more, you know, quote unquote consensus culture, it has this really interesting cultural resonance that's so much different from now, but there's a lot of different shades that when you kind of dig a little bit deeper and unpack some of those themes, they can feel extremely resonant to today as well.
So how much history research did you do to bring this book together?
Oh, I did so much more than I thought I was going to do, I'll say. Started out doing a lot, digging into particularly history around the city of Portland, like almost in some cases on a block by block basis. I found myself going down deep wormholes around what used to be in certain parts of the city, how the city has changed so much. And so I did like a really wide, almost like survey of the entire city in some ways, and then found all these interesting nuggets, like, you know, a lot of places in the book are lightly fictionalized versions of things that really did exist, or sort of, you know, slightly turned versions of aspects of the city that used to be more prominent. So I did tons of research, and there were many writing days where I would set out to write, you know, a couple of pages that day and would instead read about obscure, closed for the last 50 years music halls for 8 hours.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I could see how that would kind of interfere in getting the book done. So let's ask, how long did it take from the first time you started the book, all your research and getting it all together? How long did that whole process take from thought to publication?
Yeah, from thought to publication, I would say is about 2.5 years. And I somewhat cleanly divide that into, I think it took about 1.5 years to write, about 6 months to 9 months to edit, and then about 3 months to publish and work with various contractors I had for the interior design and the cover design, and then another, you know, chunk of 3 or 4 months miscellaneous to kind of go back and do some revisions as well. So I'd say about 2.5 years from very start to the finished product.
Okay, let's get back into the book. So what about your characters? You have this pain in the ass detective, and then you have this kind of, you know, just going to make a name for himself detective. So how did you come up with those two detectives, and was it fun to write their different aspects of their characters?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the second part. It was extremely fun to write the different aspects and sort of their interactions with one another. And as you're picking up on, sort of from the beginning, was starting from a place of having some built-in antipathy to their sort of styles and perspectives. And I started from the place of the main protagonist, Buck, who is the sort of, as you mentioned, premier pain in the ass detective. And writing him particularly came from a place of, you know, in the tradition of a lot of hard-boiled fiction, he's got a lot of flaws. He's got a lot of things that make him, you know, sort of a tough person to be around. But inside of that is kind of a somewhat obscured but deep moral code and an idea of right and wrong, and particularly sort of grounded in the idea of, you know, rooting for the underdog. So there's this third rail of shared morality between them that they come at from very different angles. So it was fun to write the sort of border skirmishes on the edges of their philosophies, while there is kind of an undertow between them that gradually brings them closer and closer together, because, you know, they realize that they have more in common on their worldview than maybe the aesthetics of how they approach it would let on.
So I've got more questions, but I have to know, is this going to be a standalone book, or do you have a series planned, or what's your thoughts for this book?
Yeah, I'm really proud of how the book very much stands on its own. And I had originally started out writing it as just a single entry, but over the course of writing it, I've had a lot of different ideas for next installments. And I think that the book really lends itself to future entries. So I would love to write more and have begun the process. But, you know, as I said, with the 2.5 years, it can it can feel like it's a little far away.
Right. But I know from reading the book that you kind of get absorbed into this character book, and it's like, okay, what's he going to do next time? It just kind of feels like there's room for it to grow.
That's great. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. So what about this book that you feel makes it specifically Northwestern?
Well, I think that diving into a lot of the specific history, of course, helps ground it very physically in that time. But I think also that there's sort of an approach to things that feels like, because when you think about a lot of the hard-boiled fiction that is traditionally based in Southern California, there's a flinty, jagged sort of interaction with the supposed optimism of California at the time. And here, I think that it's sort of juxtaposed more Pacific Northwest minded of there's more of that surface level politeness that I think is more ingrained in the Pacific Northwest, but it really goes into how a lot of that can be very surface level at times, and how there can be this sort of shimmering reality under the otherwise pristine layer of something. So I think that, to imbue that with a lot of the physicality of the region, of with the rain and the gray and the sort of mist of the Pacific Northwest, is a kind of continuation of that symbol of there's a lot going on under the surface that can feel like deep, deep roots, to at the risk of mi mixing metaphors there, that I think makes it particularly Pacific Northwest, in addition to just, again, using a lot of the real demographic history, using a lot of the city's history, and specifically trying to make Portland in some ways both highly specific to the experience and history of the Pacific Northwest, but also as a bit of a stand-in for America more broadly.
So let's talk to the whole writing process. Do you write from an outline, or do you discover the story as you go? Are you a pantser or a plotter?
Historically, I am a pantser, but I found with this that the mystery aspect necessitated a lot of plotting. So I have a conspiracy theorist-esque board in my bedroom that's connected, little note cards connected by bits of string and scrawlings of black pen, sort of outlining the how the plot is supposed to move. And so I feel like it's the outline itself gradually came together, but there was filling in as I went, and some very large parts of the story were sudden diversions that were unplanned. So it's a bit of a mix, but I think I did a lot more pantsing, or sorry, plotting this time than I have in previous projects.
Well, I can think myself that if you're doing a mystery, there has to be some plotting. I mean, there has to be
Right.
some, you can't just all of a sudden solve the mystery at the end. I mean, that doesn't make a very happy book.
Exactly. One of the processes of revision that I underwent is I had finished a draft and I went back and read through, and I made note of every time sort of a new element to the plot was introduced. And I sort of graphically arced that out to see if those arcs always landed in an explanation or a resolution or things like that. So it required a lot of plotting, as you say, initially, just to make sure that the mystery aspect was coherent, but then also to make sure I didn't leave any loose ends and things that were unintentional loose ends, because of course there's always, red herrings and certain vagaries to the plot, but you don't want to leave big parts kind of flapping in the wind.
So how, let's talk a little bit about your red herrings. How did you go about putting those into the story? How did you come up with them and then kind of just ease them into it and take us down a side trip?
Well, in that way, I drew from a lot of I had read a lot of Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett specifically before writing the book, and kind of while writing the book as well. And as you and listeners would know, Dashiell Hammett is in some ways often credited with being like the one of the real progenitors of the hard-boiled genre, and Raymond Chandler being sort of the pinnacle of the form in a lot of ways for people, at least in sort of the golden age of hard-boiled fiction. And so what I learned a lot from reading those books is, Dashiell Hammett's work is very tight. It drives, 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 drives. And with Chandler, there's a lot more digression. There's a lot more sort of alleys and cul-de-sacs to, you know, it's not just driving down one highway. So I thought about that a lot. And I thought about how in real life, when we're working through problems, how those things happen and what it feels like to encounter those things. It doesn't feel like they're sort of suddenly a mistake or something that you have to immediately reverse out of. What I find is that when you're trying to unknot a problem, as you know, a mystery is on a grander scale, is those things can feel like they guide you towards the ultimate resolution in an indirect way. So I tried to both make the red herrings feel like, oh, we're going down this path, but oh, it's not going to be what we initially thought it was in this direction. But how does that fold back into the greater narrative, both in a plot way, but also in a thematic way? And I really tried very hard to make sure that all of the various plot beats were continually hitting the sort of same thematic chords that I had initially set out to write about.
So sometimes in writing, they talk about the muddle in the middle. Was there ever a part in the book where you thought, oh my God, this is not going to work? Or, you know, and how did you work through that if you had that happen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll say that there were many times where I didn't necessarily think it wouldn't work, but I realized after putting a month into a certain chapter that, oh, I'm going to throw this entire thing out. And what I have found gradually, especially writing this book, is if something is not working for a long amount of time, sometimes that just means it's not going to work with the story that you have, right? And by the something, I mean a specific chapter or even down to paragraphs. So I feel like that's where, you know, having some of that pantsing element in the story, that could get very muddled. It has to be the way that I write it, but it could get very muddled because I start down this sort of garden path and I'm really in love with this particular description of this particular new plot or new point in the story. And I find after working on it for weeks, I have to throw this whole thing out and start back where I had been weeks ago. And, you know, I think the hit to morale that comes with that is sometimes hard to bounce back from. So I had plenty of muddling in the middle, I assure you.
I think I would have to. So I want to go, maybe we'll come back to this because I want to get, I want to cover how the book is out in the world. But so you write these short stories and they're really, so I read a couple of them and I was like, oh,
cool.
My gosh, those are really amazing. So what, this one where it was the end, I wouldn't say the, what do you call it?
Apocalypse pop.
Yeah, do you remember? You know what? Which one I'm talking about?
I definitely know. Yeah.
Okay, so that is a very, very strange story. I mean, and so I want to know what brought you to write that story. I hope the readers or the listeners will go look at your website and because they can read that story there. It's kind of fun. So What was the process for writing short stories? And did you do the short stories first before you ever went into novel writing?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question because I think from a process perspective, short stories are incredibly important. And I won't pretend to be any great expert, but what I have found, I heard the advice once just to finish things. And I think just finishing things, especially in creative endeavors, is incredibly powerful. And it sometimes that means that you finish something and you're not happy with it, but it's done and you can move on. And I think that, you know, setting aside the joy that I found of writing short stories, just the propulsive momentum of I have this idea, I'm working on it, it's done, I can move on, is something that, for me at least, that momentum builds and builds and builds, and also has the effect of really strengthening those writing muscles generally. So I have found short stories to be extremely enjoyable to write, but also from a sort of craft perspective, indispensable. And I really have to give credit to Quarterly West, which originally published that story. They're a journal out of, I believe, Utah. And it really put a lot of wind at my back because I was like, oh, this is a weird story that I am very proud of. And it found a home, was published. And that kind of gave me additional confidence to keep moving on a lot of those short stories. And where that story specifically came from was, you know, it feels like an eternity ago at this point, but COVID. And it started from this idea of when all of the first lockdowns were happening, just thinking like things disappearing effectively without ceremony, just gone out of your life. And kind of thinking through this idea of we're so interconnected and we see so many things from a distance now, whether it's through screens or, you know, through talking with people, we live increasingly isolated and atomized lives, and thinking through like how fragile our idea of the world is, especially when there's something, you know, a huge crisis like COVID going on, because it sort of feels like, you know, the lights are going off all over Europe type moment. So that's where it came from, of this idea of like, how do I thematically represent this case, this feeling of isolation that was very deep at that moment and felt like it was undermining the like, you know, superstructure of how we even view the world.
Right. So that's great. So do you continue to write short stories? And when you're doing like a big project, like a novel, do you take some breaks to write short stories, or are they like different times periods that you do them?
It's mostly different time periods. I honestly think I would benefit from doing them both at the same time. And as much as I am a reader who reads, you know, four or five books at the same time, I have found that I really need, from a writing perspective, to be dug into the singular project. So what I try to do in an ideal setting is write a few short stories, get some of these ideas. Because also what I find about short stories is they let you know pretty quickly if the idea you have is novel length or not. Like starting with a short story, writing an idea can really give you an idea of if there's more meat on the bone than you can possibly go into, or if a short story, in my own conception, is more of a, you know, it's a flash of something. It's a quick turn and a quick turn away. And so I think that doing that, getting that muscle built up, getting that momentum, and then going into a longer project, or in the process of doing that, discovering a longer project, is extremely helpful. But once I'm in the longer projects, I tend to be kind of dogmatic about focusing on them.
Yeah, I would think you'd almost have to, in a sense. But what about your background for writing? Did you take any courses? Do you get a coach? Do you read any books? What helped you make your book a really good book?
Well, I appreciate you saying a really good book. You know, no, not really. I didn't take any courses. I have done no coaching. I've just kind of wrote my whole life. And you know, I'll say that that's had real benefits and real drawbacks too. You know, I think some of the benefits have been that it's enabled me to develop a sort of idiosyncratic style and an idiosyncratic approach, and it's enabled me to be very true to how I view certain stories or projects. I think the downside is the more I get into different projects and the more I get along in sort of my writing career, is you do see where some of these, like an MFA program or coaching or writers groups, can be very beneficial. And the one thing that I did do that I previously had never done for High Water Heavy was I had basically alpha and beta readers of friends and kind of colleagues who gave me, you know, some impressions and things that they felt like worked, things that they felt like didn't. But I've at times, to my detriment, tried to stay pretty interiorly focused on building the craft.
Yeah, I think I go the other way. I think I just take too many courses and never get the project done. I'm really gonna, of all the things that you say, I love the part where, you know, just get it done, finish it, have an end to a project. I think that's so important.
Hands down, best advice I've ever gotten.
Yeah. So my last question is, are basically, now that your book is published, what have you done? There's, you know, we have this interview here, but what are you doing to get it out to your reading public?
Yeah, I have it self-published, and I'm currently querying literary agents. So, you know, if any are listening, feel free to reach out. Additionally, I've been doing a lot of book fairs and book festivals in the Pacific Northwest. And we'll be doing, the next one I'll be doing is up in Vancouver, I believe on September 26th. And the wackiest thing was in late May, my wife and our one-year-old son and I drove down to San Francisco for the Bay Area Book Festival. and so was, you know, hawking some books down in Berkeley with a little baby, which was a lot of fun. So doing a lot of those like local events and festivals and just kind of generally trying to get the word out there.
So was there anything that you found surprising that was successful?
You know, I think that speaking of sort of the things that keep you going and the things that are motivating, I have found book fairs and getting out there and being able to stand with a physical copy of the thing that you have completed and being proud of that and being able to talk to people about not only your book or your books, but also just writing in general is an extremely important thing and has been extremely important for me. I sort of refer to it when I'm talking with my wife as being a writer in public. And I think so much of being a writer is being a writer in our own minds or in, you know, a certain room of our house or a certain coffee shop in our neighborhood. But I think it's incredibly important and motivating also to be a writer in public and to practice that muscle as well of like what it means to talk about your book, to pitch your book, and what it means to, again, build that skill of just thinking in that way of you're constantly writing, even if you don't have a computer or a notepad in front of you. Like it's a thing that you never turn off.
Right. I've got to have one more question. And that is, let's bring your family into it. What is your writing life like? Is this a full-time job? Are you working towards that? And how is your family supporting you?
Oh yeah. I would love it to be a full-time job. Right now it is not. I work in kind of local government as my career. So what I try to do is I try to write, I write time-wise in big chunks. So I like to take several hours on days when I can, usually the weekends or the evenings. And my wife is extremely supportive of, you know, from a financial perspective, I'm working another job, so she doesn't have to worry about that so much. But she's extremely emotionally supportive, which I found is a lot harder work anyway. So I'm very grateful for her, to her for that. And just, you know, also I'm lucky to have broached a lot of friends with talking about writing and sort of reading things as well. So I have a really good social circle who I think gives me honest but loving feedback. And so that's very helpful.
Okay, so thanks, Corbin, for sharing your book, your writing story, and your whole aspect of getting out there. I really appreciate it. And I hope that your next book comes out. I think it was a fun book, so I'd like to see book two in the series.
Thanks, Patty. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I really appreciate being on the program.
Thanks for listening to Northwest Book Talk, where we meet authors and discover the stories behind their books. You can find more author interviews, featured books, and past episodes at northwestbooktalk.com. I'm Patty Gresher. Northwest Book Talk also airs on KXRW 99.9 FM in Vancouver, Washington. Until next time, keep reading and keep discovering great books.
Support for KXRW comes from Blunt Insurance Group, an independent insurance agency based in Vancouver, Washington. They provide options for home, auto, business, and personal coverage, working with a range of providers. More information is available at BluntInsuranceGroup.com. Blunt Insurance Group, supporting our community and KXRW Community Radio.
Furry Friends is a Vancouver, Washington 501c3 nonprofit, volunteer-run, no-kill cat rescue and adoption organization. If you would like to help save cats and kittens in the Vancouver-Portland area, there is a need for finances, goods, cat foster parents, volunteers, and adopters. Please visit their website for wish lists and other ways you can help at furryfriendswa.org. That's furryfriendswa.org.